Around the world, wherever American servicemen and women are stationed, it's game time. Time for Sports Quiz. Welcome, everyone, to Sports Quiz, the lively question game which sends the fans against the experts. Brain-teasing questions from sports fan in service, answers from a quartet of famous sports writers. And here's the chairman of the meeting, the man who'll ask the questions and grade the papers, Sergeant Mel Allen.
Thank you very much, Ken Banghart. Hello, everybody. Well, there's a Class AA contest scheduled here today, so hang on to your seats, because we can promise you plenty of action when our guest experts take a crack at the questions sent in from overseas. Actually, it's a big doubleheader, because the experts have been divided into teams, the red and the blue, and they'll compete against each other as well as against the fans. And now I want you to meet our guests, five of the nation's top sports reporters. On my right is the blue team, consisting of the sports editor of the San Francisco Chronicle, Bill Leiser, Royal Broyum, sports editor of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, and the popular sports editor of the Los Angeles Times, Braven Dyer. On my left, another grand twosome, the sports editor of the Portland, Oregon Journal, George Burtz, and the world-famous sports feature writer for the Atlanta Journal, O.B. Keeler. Now, gentlemen, here are the rules of the game. All questions have a point value fair to both sides. Each team receives credit for as much of the question as it answers. Now, if you fail to answer a question correctly, I ring the bell on you like this, and then the question is thrown to the other side for an opportunity to pick up extra points. The team which winds up with the highest total is, of course, declared the winner. And the prize, well, it's just that good old-fashioned pride in winning. Well, there are the ground rules. We're all set to go. Starting out with a team of Bill Dyer, Bill Leiser. I said Bill Dyer, I mean Braven Dyer, Bill Leiser, and Royal Braum. At the behest of Staff Sergeant Al Olson of the European Theater of Operations, we start the ball rolling with this teaser concerning baseball. Which batter in the National League has hit the most home runs in a lifetime?
Well, being in New York, Mel, I assume that the man's name must begin with M, and it must be Mel, and it must be Mellott, isn't it?
That's right, Braven Dyer. It is Mellott, popular manager of the New York Giants. All right, who holds the record in the National League for reaching first base by virtue of bases on balls the most times?
Is that the same guy?
That's
Mellott?
The same. Right, Bill Leiser, same guy, Mellott. All right. Who at the present time holds the National League record for starting double plays from his outfield position?
Isn't there anybody else in this league? That's Ott, too.
That's right. That's Mel Ott, too, Royal Braum. All right, now this last part of the question, incidentally, it's a four-point question, four parts to it. Which player holds the record of having been hit by a pitcher three times in one game?
No, Doctor, you can't catch me. It must be Mellott.
It must be. It is Mellott. And 4 points for the team of Dyer, Leiser, and Braum. Were you gentlemen here a year ago at the kids' high school game? Mellott managed one of those teams, didn't he?
He did.
Which, let's see, the
got
East...
beat, too, didn't it?
Did the East win?
Mellott got beat.
Oh. Did Mel manage the Western team?
Yeah.
And got beaten. I shouldn't have asked the trio of Western sports writers here that question.
Mel, that was due largely to a fluke.
All right, let's move along to Mr. Keeler now and Mr. George Burtz. For your first test, gentlemen, here are names of certain well-known sports personalities which are harmonious with those who have achieved renown in other fields of endeavor. From the brief description given, you must identify the sports celebrity and his namesake. It's a four-point question, four parts. Number one, an unsuccessful presidential candidate and a member of a big league baseball club pitching staff. O.B. Keeler?
Al Smith.
Al Smith, that's right. Al Smith, who's the left-handed pitcher for the Cleveland Indians, and, of course, the late and beloved Al Smith, former governor of New York and former presidential candidate for the Democratic Party. All right, number two, one of the greatest track stars produced by Columbia University and a celebrated English dramatist and poet of another era.
That's Ben Johnson.
That's right, Ben Johnson. Absolutely right. And number three, O.B. would have helped you out on that one, George, if you hadn't gotten it. You know a lot about Ben Johnson, don't you, O.B.?
Not too much.
Can't you quote some of his poetry?
Yes, but not in public.
Now, a renowned contemporary concert musician and football coach. I'll give you a bit of a hint on that. Of course, this fellow, the musician, is a fiddle player.
Chrysler.
That's
Fritz
right.
Chrysler.
Fritz Chrysler, the violinist, and Fritz Chrysler, the football coach at the University of Michigan. They spell their names differently, though. Can you spell them, O.B. or George?
Violinist is K-R-E-I-S-L-E-R, and then the coach is K-R-I-S-L-E-R.
Wrong.
C-R-Y-S.
We ought to ring the bell on that one.
No, 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 you can't ring the bell on C-R-Y-S-L-E-R.
That's the... You think of the automobile. You think of the automobile.
The vehicle, I suppose, huh?
Mel, that's phonetic Oregon spelling.
You got the first half right. The violinist, K-R-E-I-S-L-E-R. Football coach begins with a C. C-R-I-S-L-E-R. I didn't mean to embarrass you, but we just did that.
You did.
We want to be devils once in a while. O.B. said we did that purposely.
I move we have no more spelling questions.
All right.
Second the motion.
The chair will entertain that motion. What about this last part? A Mexican revolutionary general and a former flyweight boxing champion.
Pancho Villa.
That's right, Pancho Villa. And 4 points for the team of O.B. Keeler and George Burtz.
Hot dog.
Well, good, man. Good,
well, you gentlemen did all right as we got through the first inning. Now let's move along. The team of Dyer, Leiser, and Brown. Private A.O. Mason of the ETO comes through with a challenge that is really a sizzler. On your medal for this one, mates. Your task is to tell us how the following speeds were made for the distance of 1 mile. I'll give you the time in which the mile was traversed, and not necessarily the record time, because if I gave you the record, it might be a little too easy. I'll give you the time, at any rate, in which the mile was traversed, and from that, you must identify the method of locomotion. In other words, if just for the sake of argument, if I said a mile was negotiated in 10 minutes, then you know, of course, that was made by mule. Riding mule back. But here we go for 5 points. 20 minutes, 57 and 8-tenths seconds. 20 minutes, 57 and 8-tenths seconds.
Let me get that New York taxi cab at noon.
That's the car. I should give you 5 points and just move on from there, but that's a very good thought.
What is
the only
relay?
Thing next to as slow as that would have to be walking or swimming. Swimming, I think.
Swimming is absolutely right. 20 minutes, 57 and 8-tenths seconds for the mile would be swimming. Now then, let's move along. What about this one? 6 minutes, 25 and 8-tenths seconds. By what means of locomotion could you negotiate the mile? And
that's a slow track man's mile.
Very
kind
slow.
I used to run.
That must be the heel and toe, Mel, isn't it? The walking?
Absolutely right, Braven. Braven Dyer came through with the right one there by walking. Of course, I've seen some people walk a mile in less than 6 minutes. Some of them take a lot longer than 6 minutes. All right, 4 minutes, 6 4/10 seconds. Or let's, we can leave it at that. We can say... To give you a bit of a hint, I'll make it 4 minutes, 1 4/10 seconds.
Those are all mile records. Anybody knows that?
Mile records for what?
For running.
Well, that's what I want to know, running.
Sorry.
These are all the mile times. Not all of them are necessarily records. That would be running. What was the name of the athlete who ran it 414? Just offhand.
Anderson or Haig, I forget which one.
Arn Anderson, I believe it was, wasn't it, Royal?
There is a champ there.
Yes, it was. I still don't believe he could ever beat Paavo Nurmi if the two had run against each other, and I think the best Nurmi ever ran was about 4:10. He might have run faster than that, O.B., but I'd still take Nurmi to beat either Anderson or Haig. I've never seen Anderson, but I've seen Haig run, as you have, and I think Nurmi, at his peak, would beat any runner that ever lived over the mile route.
Where did you see Paavo Nurmi, Braven, down the coast or overseas?
Well, a rather phenomenal thing happened. He came down to Los Angeles many, many years ago, more years ago than I would care to admit. And he appeared on a Saturday afternoon running the mile. I don't remember his time because that wasn't the important part, but he drew about 40,000 people. And this was on a Saturday afternoon, and the next day was Sunday out there as well as elsewhere. And they got together and decided to run him again in a night meet on Tuesday night, but they didn't decide it until so late on Sunday night that it couldn't appear in the papers until Monday afternoon and Tuesday morning. So they had about 20 hours of publicity on it, and they broke down the gates out at the Coliseum to see Paavo Nurmi run again all by himself. He ran around a darkened track. They didn't even have lights. They just had a spotlight on him. Running a mile all by himself, and he drew about 50,000 people that time. And then, of course, he did come back for the 1932 Olympic Games, and unfortunately, they barred him because I believe he'd sold somebody a pair of socks over in wherever he came from, and he was judged a salesman and had ruined his amateur standing.
Mel, I got it.
That's a very good story, Raven.
Mel, I just want to put in 2 cents worth there. Sure. I don't disagree with Braven about what Paavo Nurmi might do if he were in his prime right now. But if Gunder Haig will quit running his head on a swivel and quit fooling around and looking back and start running, see, he'll run a mile under 4 minutes. Think if Dink Templeton had him in San Francisco and could teach him running for 3 months, the guy would do under that 4 minute mile that everybody's been talking about. He can really run it. He's got it in him.
He does look back a lot.
Who is Dink Templeton, Mr. Lizer?
I think you and I have had this long enough.
Well, who is Dink Templeton?
I know Dink Templeton is. The greatest track coach in the world. Everybody in track and field knows that, and Braven will agree with it right now.
Well, everything greatest comes from California.
What did you say, Royal? I didn't hear you.
Let's get out of California and get back to this quiz here.
Well, this is this digression we're enjoying very much. I do want to ask this one other question before we continue. Do you think the Olympic Games will be held again soon?
Yes.
That's short, sweet answer. I guess it would be 1948. Be the they'll be held then, and probably in London, won't they, or rather in England somewhere?
That's been reported. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Let's move along now for the mile. We're still talking about the mile. 2 minutes 38 4/10 seconds. What would be the means of locomotion to negotiate the mile in that time? 2 minutes, 38 4/10 seconds. A human being.
Stop me.
Let me put it.
Kitty car, roller skating.
It'd be done in the wintertime. It could be done in the wintertime.
Bill had it. He said roller skating. It must have been some kind of skating.
That's right, on skates. All right. I'm sorry I didn't hear Bill say that.
I said roller skates or kitty car.
I heard the kitty car part. 2 minutes, 38 and 4/10 to be on skates. 1 minute, 34 and 2/10 seconds.
That's horse racing.
That's right. That'd be horse racing. Equipoise, incidentally, ran the mile in 1 minute, 34 and 2/10 seconds. I don't know whether that's been beaten. I'm not too familiar with the horse racing records.
Salvatore was 1:35, I think.
Salvatore?
That stood up for nearly 40 years.
You know, Mel, some of us went out to Belmont. Yeah. Back, O.B. told us, he asked us how we came out, and of course we lost. And he said, young man, he said, you should remember this. No horse can go as fast as the money you bet on him.
Nothing was ever any better said either. That reminds me of Milton Berle one time out at the track. We're talking about trying to pick a horse that was going to win. Johnny Longdon had just ridden three successive winners And Longdon was riding this horse in the fourth race, and Burl said he was picking the horse that Longdon was riding. And I said, well, he might be the favorite, but I said, the odds are against Longdon riding four mounts home in succession. Burl came back and said, does the horse know who's riding him? I think that's pretty much the same thing. Well, that's the signal marking the halftime, gentlemen. Before we move along, I do, just for the sake of settling some arguments that may arise overseas, we've been talking about the mile and various times and the means of locomotion. 25 4/10 seconds is the motorboat record. 9 8/10 seconds, I think, in an automobile, and, well, the airplane for the mile now, we don't know what it would be. At one time, was 7 2/10 seconds, which is in the way, averages around 500 miles per hour. But that just gives them a pretty good idea anyway. Well, here we go with the team of O.B. Keeler and George Birch. From Sergeant Herb Malco in Pacific comes this popular query, and we're happy to have it. He reminds us of the time that Bobby Jones won four major golf tournaments. Now then, he wants to know what were they, where were they played, and what year, for 4 points. O.B., that ought to be right down your alley.
The Grand Slam.
The Grand Slam, that's right.
The first tournament he won was the British Amateur Championship at St. Andrews, where the Royal and Ancient Golf Club lives. Public course, incidentally. The second tournament he won was at Hoy Lake, the Royal Liverpool Golf Club, the British Open Championship. The third was at Interlaken, up in the good old town of Minneapolis, the United States Open. And the fourth and last was the United States Amateur at the Marion Cricket Club just out of Philadelphia. And as George Trevor, New York newspaper man and one of our older golf writers, expressed it better than anyone has ever put it before or since, and I've quoted him 100 times and always give him credit. He said, instead of calling it the Grand Slam, which was what I called it, George Trevor said that Bobby Jones had entrenched his record safely and forever within the impregnable quadrilateral of golf.
Very good. O.B., in that Grand Slam in 1930, were there any of those tournaments, was Bobby ever close to being defeated?
Twice in the British Amateur. George Voigt, a victim of circumstance, if there ever was one, and Cyril Tolley, who took Jones to the only extra hole match he played in it, the 19th green. Cyril, James Hastings Tolley. George Voigt was two up with five to play at St. Andrews. And a curious thing, Mel, a huge gallery. There was a gallery of about 18 or 20,000, and they were so close around the tee that George, of course, he was concentrating on that drive. He forgot that there was a sweeping wind from his left because the gallery kept it off of him. And he played a straight, tall, towering drive right down the middle of a narrow fairway, and the wind took it out of bounds. And that was the break.
That's very interesting, O.B. I guess we could keep you here all evening talking about Bobby Jones and the various tournaments he was in and the tournaments that you covered.
Well, the one that we think about over here, and they still call it in Minneapolis, the lily pad shot, was when he, two little girls who had autograph albums, popped under the rope to get him to sign his autograph in their albums just as he was swinging for a wood shot across the lake on the ninth hole.
Mm-hmm.
And he half-topped it, and the ball skipped across the lake, one chance in 100,000, popped out on the bank, and instead of getting a 6 or a 7 on the hole, he chipped up and holed a putt for a birdie 4, which saved him 2 strokes, and he won the championship by 2 strokes.
That's wonderful. Well, we stand almost even, 9-8 now, as we move along to the team of Dyer, Leiser, and Brom. Corporal Ronald Moore of the CBI wants to test your knowledge of football history in a period that goes back to the First World War. Name the first Eastern team to play in the Rose Bowl, the opponent, the year, and the score of the game.
Well, Mel, I would say that the sergeant, whoever sent that question in, Probably wouldn't be able to answer that question himself, because if he means the Rose Bowl, that would be Penn State. If he means in a Tournament of Roses game, that would be Michigan. But if he means an accepted date for the first game, that would be Brown. And to clarify that, there was a game staged shortly after 1900 between Michigan and Stanford. And I'm sorry to relate, for the benefit of the Western fans, that Michigan gave them a terrible trouncing. And I believe that team was coached by Fielding Yost, wasn't it, Bill?
Hurry up, Yost.
And then there was a cessation of games until 1916, which probably is the one the serviceman means. That was the game between Washington State and Brown in 1916. Brown had a great football team, and they had a great halfback by the name of Fritz Pollard, who was a great player, and unfortunately the field out there, I don't know how it happened, was a little damp. We had an extra dew or something, and it bothered the fleetness of this Fritz Pollard, and I believe Mr. Pollard's son has been a lieutenant or a captain in the war, and was also a fine athlete. And that's probably the game he mentions, and Washington State won that 14-0.
Well, I'm very, very glad to get that cleared up. As a matter of fact, he was quite ambiguous, and as you pointed out, but what he apparently had in mind was the first accepted date for the start.
That was not played in what is the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl was built in 1922, and of course the first team that played in the Rose Bowl, visiting team, Mr. Leiser, was the University of California at Berkeley, was it not? Played against Southern California in a regularly scheduled game, but the first Rose Bowl game was University of Southern California against Penn State.
Well, that's very interesting. Well, now, that Brown-Washington State game that you mentioned in 1916, for the second part of this question, at which Washington State won 14-0, can you name the famous coach who later led teams coached by him to victory in the same bowl and also to defeat, too, who played on that Eastern team in that first game, and if possible, identify the position he played for Brown?
I haven't been listening since Craven's got all that stuff at his fingertips. Let him go ahead.
Well, that was, they undoubtedly refer to Wallace Wade, who was a coach of the Brown team. I mean, played on the Brown team. I think he played as a guard.
That's
either
right.
A guard or as a tackle.
A guard.
And I doubt if he weighed more than about 175 pounds at the time. But Wallace was a difficult man to beat, either as a coach or a football player. And that has been proved many, many times in the Rose Bowl and around California and on other gridirons, as all the football fans know, and has also been proved again recently when he conducted himself with great merit as an officer in the United States Army. And the boys here from the South tell me that he's now back down at Duke University.
He is,
where he'll be athletic director.
That's right. I suppose talking about his winning and in the bowl and being defeated, the name of Doyle Knave probably will always ring some sort of memory in his mind. Is that the only time he's ever been beaten in a bowl?
No, that,
offhand,
was, that was the first time he was beaten, Mel, and he was beaten. Yes, that's the only time he was beaten. Alabama was beaten later.
That's right.
By Bill Leiser's California team, one of the greatest teams we ever had on the Pacific Coast.
I'm glad to hear that. I went to Alabama, and I was always sorry. That's the only time they ever lost out there.
That's
I'm
right.
Glad California had a great team that year.
They also lost that transplanted Rose Bowl game.
That's right. Duke and Oregon.
Oregon State.
Oregon State
right,
beat them at. At Durham.
Durham, North Carolina.
Well, that's 4 points for the team of Dyer, Leiser, and Brom, and so we move along now to the team of Keeler and Burtz. In the history of sports, not only have various leading events been given places of permanent fame, but also the cities in which they were contested. Sergeant Cal Smith of the Pacific wants you gentlemen to tell us what special significance the following cities have in sports annals. Richburg, Mississippi.
I got that one over here. That was the scene of the last World's Heavyweight Championship fight without gloves.
That's right, last bare-knuckle heavyweight
championship
fight.
Sullivan and Kilrain.
Right.
75 rounds.
Right, O.B. and George. Swell. All right. Athens, Greece.
First Olympic Games, and did the marathon end there? No. First Olympic Games, anyway.
First Olympic Games in 1896. Hoy Lake, England. You already mentioned that, so you...
That's the golf.
British golf.
That's right, Bobby, where Bobby Jones won the British Open in 1930. Springfield, Massachusetts.
Springfield, Massachusetts was the birthplace of basketball.
That's right. And
which,
Cooperstown...
By the way, draws the most people of any sport.
That's right, George.
Is that true?
It they have greater attendance than any other sport. Total attendance. That is, considering all your high schools and places that play basketball.
Mostly in Indiana, too, isn't it?
That's the hotbed of it. It was at one time, at any rate, although the Pacific Coast has taken it up in great fashion. Cooperstown, New York.
Cooperstown, New York. That's the home of the first baseball game.
Well, it's a home of baseball
that's where
shrine.
They have that museum up there now.
A little argument as to whether or not that's the actual home of baseball. It is the origination of the game. But we won't get into that argument now. Well, we stand, gentlemen, tied at 13-13. All tied up with approximately 1 minute left to go.
How did they get that extra point without an extra question?
Well, you had one question that had a little more evaluation than they did. We evened it up, you see. We've got about 1 minute left, and it's a tie, 13-13, so let's see if we can break it. I'm going to throw some nicknames at each side in alternate fashion, nicknames of sports personalities, and let's see how many of them you can get. Each one counts 1 point, and I'll throw them at you fast, and you give me your answer just as fast, and see if we can break this 13-13 deadlock. Starting out with Dyer, Leiser, and Brown, King Kong.
Teller.
That's right. Steamboat.
Johnson.
Right. Dolph.
Camelli.
Right. Kai Kai.
Kyler.
Right. Mad Russian.
Novikov.
Muggsy.
McGraw.
Pep.
Young.
Cap.
Who?
Cap. Cap. C-A-P. Cap.
Old. Pistol.
Give it to you right quickly.
Anson.
Cap.
Johnson.
Cap Anson. That's Anson. Right. Cap Anson and Pop.
Warner.
Pop Warner, and the last one, Rube.
Waddell.
That's absolutely right. Well, there's the whistle, gentlemen. The final whistle. The game's over, so stand by for the final score. Final score, we're still all tied up 18-18 after all those nicknames. Well, thanks a million to Bill Leiser, Royal Braun, Braven Dyer, George Burtz, and O.B. Keeler. It's been a real pleasure having you gentlemen here for our little brain battle, and we hope the next time you gentlemen hit this area that we can entice you back again real soon. And now until next week, this is Sergeant Mel Allen saying to everybody everywhere, so long and good luck. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.